questions. I think they were very strategic ones when we were asking the other ones. They wanted to hear how the questions are. But I promise you we'll ask different questions. You'll be surprised. So I think you heard as we were introducing the members. We've got Honorable Kekana, we've got Honorable Dr. Lotrek, and we've got Honorable Teplan. She's just gone out, she's coming back. And we've got our secretariat here. So we won't waste time. We'll just go straight to you so that you could introduce yourself, and after introduction, we go straight to your big business.
Thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members. I really do appreciate this time. Let me just start off by introducing the team that is with me here today. Firstly, I'm Steve Lennon. I'm Chair of the National Advisory Council on Innovation, the outgoing Chair. This is actually my last day. And the new Chair of the Council, Professor De La Rey, takes over with effect from tomorrow. And then to my left, we have Professor Jennifer Thompson and Advocate Louisa Zonder. They are both council members. And they will also both be members of the new council. So it's very important to get the continuity. And then from the secretariat, we have the acting head of the secretariat, Nasipa Butlezi, and Petrus Lataba from the secretariat. And I'll talk more about that shortly. Chair. I'm singing for my supper today. So neither the singer nor the medicine, Chair, unfortunately. Chair, let me just start off by saying what is next. The National Advisory Council for Innovation is a statutory body that exists under the NACI Act. And our mandate is to advise the Minister for Science and Technology, and through the Minister, any ministerial committees and cabinet, on the role and contribution of science, maths, innovation and technology, including indigenous technologies, in promoting and achieving national objectives. And I'll talk quite a bit about that. So we're an advisory body, and I'll show you what the council looks like in the last slide. In unpacking what it is that NACI would focus on, is it's very important that NACI understands government's priorities and policies in relation to the national system of innovation, and that we set our agenda in consultation with the Minister of Science and Technology. So NACI itself can undertake special assignments, including requests for rapid policy advice or quick advice. We work on a project basis, so we identify a portfolio of activities, and then we put together project teams of specialists. And on the basis of that, we undertake work, and on the basis of the evidence that is produced from that work, we prepare advice that then goes through, we present that advice to the Minister, and then we will work typically with the Department of Science and Technology and other departments in the implementation of that advice. We also from time to time provide a progress review on the state of innovation in the country. I'll touch briefly on that in this presentation. And more recently, as initiated by the previous Minister of Science and Technology, Minister Hanekom convened an annual Science, Technology and Innovation Summit, and Minister Pandor has indicated that she intends to continue with that summit. And that summit was with a view to bringing together the key players in the science and technology system, and in particular with a focus on the private sector, and I'll talk more about that shortly. NACI itself, before I get onto the state of the National System of Innovation, is a council appointed by Cabinet, and the councillors are all non-executive councillors, so we are effectively all have day jobs, supported by a very, very effective secretariat, and the role of the secretariat is in not merely secretariat and administrative support to the council, but technical support in undertaking studies and processing the data from those studies and drafting position papers for the council to consider and then turn into advice. And part of what we do, Chair, is look typically annually at the state of the national system of innovation. And we summarize this in our annual report, but the basis of this assessment is what we call our indicators booklet, and we have copied this to members of this committee, and the honourable members would be familiar with this. It's an A4 document this time round. Previously it's been an A5 document. But this indicators booklet really captures some key indicators in the national system of innovation, which I'll also touch on later on. We believe, and we've reported to this committee before, that there's been a very strong emphasis on input drivers into the national system of innovation, and historically we didn't see the returns from that. And that was one of the things that has been a great concern to many of us over the years. However, we believe that if we have a look at the recent indicators, we believe that we've seen the green shoots of returns from all of these enormous investments that we have made in the national system of innovation. Part of it is that we've seen a considerable increase in the number of PhDs awarded in the sciences in recent times. Not enough, but an increase. We see an increased number of South African patents granted by the US Patent and Trademark Office. We see an improvement in the technology balance of payments. This is the balance of imported technology intellectual property versus exported intellectual property. The vast majority of our intellectual property is still imported, but we do see an improvement. And we see an increased number of high-impact publications and an overall increased proportion of science, engineering, and technology enrollments in the higher education sector. Once again, not enough, but we are seeing that. We do, however, think we've still got a long way to go before the National System of Innovation can play its true role in achieving the goals of the National Development Plan, for example. Part of it is we need to say, are we measuring the right things? And have we got the right indicators in place to determine whether we are progressing against aspirations such as those elucidated in the National Development Plan or the Industrial Participation Action Program. So far we've seen the measuring system and even the indicators in this booklet tend to focus on R&D activities and tend to focus on academia and the production of skills. And this is some of the work that we've done recently and we've advised on recently. Just saying we need to have a look at those measurements in the system, make sure we're measuring the right thing, in fact, measuring the added value to the economy, to jobs, and in a very similar way, the Technology Innovation Agency is saying this mandate is not necessarily to produce a ring-fenced return on investment for itself, but rather a return on investment for the economy as a whole. And it's those returns we need to measure. We need to still see better integration across the implementing agencies in the National System of Innovation and across government departments and the innovation infrastructure as a whole. We need to see a much bigger role for the private sector, and in particular small businesses and also the not-for-profit sector. The innovation infrastructure needs to be better networked and integrated. We need to have a better single view of the innovation infrastructure. By this I mean not only the physical infrastructure, in other words, the national facilities that we have, but also the information infrastructure and the knowledge capacity we have in the country. We have got so many good examples in South Africa of what works in the national system of innovation, in fact, in the economy as a whole. The challenge we have is scaling these things up to make a really meaningful impact, and we don't see enough of that. And then the issue of skills is one that requires constant attention. So when we have a look at this, we've been talking in the last year about refocusing the national system of innovation. I'll talk more about that shortly. Addressing the mix of skills we have in the national system of innovation, we fully support the need for us to have a lot more PhDs, but we also want to highlight the fact, which has often been mentioned in policy circles, that we need to increase the number of artisans. We need to increase the mix through the entire skills value chain in the economy. On the investment, small, medium enterprises need more funding, and in particular, we have spoken to the minister and the department about making sure that the R&D tax incentive is easily available to small businesses. And share your point you made about a rural farmer being able to access funds. I think it's a very good point, is that it's difficult for small business to access innovation funds in South Africa. We also say that the National System of Innovation is a very exclusive system. It's seen as one that is only open to those that are at the sort of higher echelons of education, the scientists and the NGOs, whereas, and as the chair of the Technology Innovation Agency Board said, is that we believe that all South Africans should be able to innovate. And so that is something that requires attention. I'll touch more upon that shortly. Our supportive infrastructure needs to be aligned with the vision of the National Development Plan. We believe that we have got many great projects in South Africa that we can build on to show what we are capable of, and that we should be having more of these flagship projects along the lines of, for example, the Square Kilometre Array. And also we need to be highlighting the role that is played by successful innovators in the South African economy, and I'll touch more on that when I talk about the framework. Chair, I've spoken already about the structure of the council. In preparing our annual performance plan, which I will get to at the end of this presentation, is that we pay a lot of attention to the key challenges that government highlights for us to address, as well as getting direction from the Minister of Science and Technology. And in putting together this annual performance plan, we've paid a lot of attention to the National Development Plan and the State of the Nation's address, making sure that there is alignment between the work that NACI is doing and the advice that NACI intends to prepare for the Minister and through the Minister Cabinet, making sure that it is aligned with these very important initiatives. So out of that, Chair, come the strategic priorities and objectives of NACI. I've spoken about monitoring, evaluation, and coordination. Then there is initiatives for development, so innovation for development, which is extremely important when it comes to, in particular, small businesses and the issue of scaling that I spoke about earlier on. Then making the bioeconomy happen. In the last year, big emphasis on giving advice relating to the bioeconomy strategy. Now it is all about implementation. How do we make sure that works effectively? Energy security and green economy, and I'll touch more on that shortly. And then what are the growth sectors that we need to focus on? And then right across the board, continual focus on skills development and retention, transformation and gender issues, the impact of science and technology on society, as well as topical big science projects for social and economic development. So those are the strategic priorities and objectives, which are enduring ones that are reflected in the NACI strategy. That strategy will be reviewed, Chair, when the new council comes into office with effect from tomorrow, but we will make sure that there is continuity and that will give us confidence then on the delivery against the current annual performance plan. But the new council will be determining its priorities for its term. Chair, just to summarise for this committee, and there will be more detail presented when the NACI annual report is presented by my successor, some of the key deliverables from the last financial year, some very good and very effective advice on gender mainstreaming in the science and technology system. And I'd like to just emphasize this, Chair, is that NACI has been engaged in gender mainstreaming for many years now, probably over a decade, and has been very, very effective in producing regular assessments of the state of gender empowerment in the science system. You will see, and we have prepared various guidelines and reports, and this small booklet, which the Secretariat arranged to be printed at very, very short notice, and I really do appreciate that. We wanted to have this available for today, which is about understanding mainstreaming, practical guide towards mainstreaming gender and disability, and This has been put together under the leadership of Advocate Zonda, and she will be very happy to talk more about this. But this is all about the importance of making sure that in the innovation system in South Africa is that we are accessing the total skills base that we have in the country. And a very important element of that is gender mainstreaming. We're very proud of the work that NACI has done over the years. We've given policy advice on strengthening skills in math, science and technology, and the focus of that was on the entire skills value chain, and in particular talking about strengthening the capacity at technical high schools and trades. We have given policy advice on upscaling innovative systems in support of small businesses, which I've also touched on. There's some definitive work that's been done on infrastructure for research and innovation, which has been very recently completed, that looks at the total innovation infrastructure and talks about how we need to support that and prepare for the future and make sure that we'll be able to deliver or use innovation in delivering on the National Development Plan. Policy advice on the assessment of the national system of science, technology, innovation indicators, which is about coming up with better indicators, which I also touched on. I've touched on the policy and legislation affecting implementation of the bioeconomy strategy, and Professor Thompson will be able to talk a lot more about that. She's been an integral part of the team over many years that has been working on the bioeconomy strategy. And then the refocused NSI, which I've touched on. And this is what we talk about. This graphic indicates what we talk about on the refocused national system of innovation. And it's really about saying is that there's 9 key elements of the system. And that core to the system, the foundation of the entire system, is the skills base that we have in our society and our economy. And then the key pillars of this national system is investment. And it's not only investment by the state, it's investment by the private sector, it's investment in small businesses, and it's a facilitation of investment by entities such as the Technology Innovation Agency, Department of Trade and Industry, IDC, etc. But also making sure that we have got a proper venture capital ethic in the investment community in South Africa, which is still quite a big gap. Then we have the requirement of an inclusive innovation sector. I've said that innovation and science and technology are seen to be very exclusive and the domain of a very small group in the economy. We do believe that if we can tap the innovation potential that we see throughout South Africa, we could fundamentally shift our society and the economy. So therefore, we need to have a look at how do you put open innovation platforms in place so that everyone in the country feels free to put their ideas forward and know that they'll be given serious consideration. We don't have the solutions. We're saying that these are the things that need further development. Then there's the innovation infrastructure, and that is the higher education structure. It's the science infrastructure, the big national facilities, the ICT infrastructure, etc. And then, very importantly, we have to demonstrate that we are capable of achieving great things. And flagship projects are very important. We've mentioned the Square Kilometre Array, but there's many other great examples of technological innovation in South Africa that we should be advertising and selling a lot more. And in my day job chair, I work for ESCOM. And one of the things that we should be a lot more proud of is what we've been able to achieve, for example, in the construction of plants such as Medupi and Kusile, which will be the world's biggest dry-cooled power stations. These are things to be proud of, not to be embarrassed about. The Square Kilometre Array is a great project. You've got many, many other examples of flagship projects that we need to be publicising a lot better so that South Africa is increasingly seen as a technology investment destination and not just an investment destination where you will take things out of the ground and so on. And then a very important part of also advertising our capabilities saying is that we need to have champions and role models, individuals in our society that we can hold up and say, we have got a very solid technological skills base and we're capable of holding our own with competing nations. And then cutting across all of these is the need for us to have credible advisory processes in place, such as through vehicles such as NACI, and also making sure that we're measuring our progress. And then the final leg is the ensuring that we have the institutional framework that enables us to deliver across the economy as a whole. So it's government, public and private sector, and making sure that we're all aligned to produce the ultimate outputs that we want, which is improved quality of life, jobs, sustainable society and environment. So, Chairs, this framework that we have developed over the last year that has been presented to the Minister of Science and Technology and that we believe can be a very strong foundation for the work of a future NACI. Some other things that we finalized recently, the e-learning platform for gender mainstreaming, which is about making sure that gender, race, and disability issues are included in the policy advisory process. I've spoken about the Understanding Mainstreaming booklet and the Indicators booklet, and then the work that we've done on skills bioeconomy. Looking ahead, Chair, what is it that NACI is going to be focusing on? And I must emphasize that a lot of this is closing off on the work of the previous council, and that the new council will be fine-tuning this work and coming up with a work program which will complement this. The governance structuring and coordination of the NSI, that's about closing off on some of the historical work that has been done. I spoke about the bioeconomy and about implementation. An element of the bioeconomy is turning biomass into bioenergy. I'm sure the example you asked about earlier on, the black wattles and the production of charcoal, is exactly that. It's converting biomass into bioenergy. This is taking it the next step, which is about biofuels, ethanol, and those kinds of fuels. Closing out on innovation indicators, dealing with skills, and continue with the gender mainstreaming. A particular emphasis that the Secretariat will be working on is orientation of the new council, which will happen in the coming month, finalizing the strategic plan for the next 5 years, which will be the focus area of the new council, and that will include stakeholder engagements, consultative workshops, and the participation in the STI summit. There is a particular focus as well, which is setting NACI up as a data repository and the creation of an innovation portal. And that is the focus of the APP, and we have reflected then the alignment with government priorities in the APP. I won't focus on that, it is in the document. As far as the resources of NACI is concerned, at the moment, Chair, NACI is serviced by the Department of Science and Technology, and the NACI budget falls within the DST budget. We use all of the DST processes as far as the human resources are concerned and as far as the commercial processes are concerned. It's a relatively modest budget, around about 50% of the budget. It's just over 50% is in compensation of employees, which is quite appropriate, given that the Secretariat is the primary vehicle that services NACI. And the goods and services, the majority of that is in the commissioning then of specialist studies that inform the advice that the council comes up with. As I've said already, the council is supported by a very effective and a specialist secretariat. It's a small group. It is a group that has, over the last year, operated without much leadership. The chief executive position has been vacant for an extended period, but an agreement between myself and the minister and the director general is that we are keeping that vacant until the new council, so that will be one of the priority areas for the chair of the new council, is to fill that vacant position. But Ms. Buttelezi has done an excellent job in the interim in that role. The Secretariat, as I say, an excellent team of specialists in policy analysis and measurement and investigation, and they have serviced the Council exceptionally well, and I'm sure that they will continue to do that into the future. Chair, the outgoing Council is listed on this slide. And just I would like to conclude by saying is that this has been a very effective council that has worked very, very well with a a massive body of work, in particular over the last 3 years, which has resulted in considerable and very focused and very practical advice that's been given to Minister Pandor and then Minister Hanekom and now again Minister Pandor in recent times. We have had excellent feedback from the Minister as to the quality of the advice and the degree of implementation of that advice, and I'd really like to just recognise the contributions that have been made by this Council over an extended period. The councillors that are continuing into the new Council to ensure that continuity is Dr. Azar Jameen, Professor Thompson and Advocate Zondo, I will be sitting down with the new chair of the council, Professor De La Rey, and making sure that the affairs of NACI are able to continue smoothly. But also, Chair, a lot of thanks go to this very effective secretariat that definitely punches above its weight in the policy space, and is highly skilled and a great resource in the national system and in the advisory space. I'd also like to, Chair, just thank the ministers that we have advised over the years for their support, the enduring support of NACI, and the Department of Science and Technology for this, and in particular the Director General, for the support that they give in constantly coming to NACI for advice and then taking the advice that we give very, very seriously. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Steve Leonard. Thank you very much for that report. And in fact, what one needs to thank, you know, you always listen to the person as they're talking, and you pick up a few things. One of the things that I think I appreciate, I don't want us to take us back to our history. We might not forget it, but we need to forgive whatever happened. But I think moving forward is to say, if I've got a skill, let me disseminate that skill and help those who can't help themselves. And I think it's coming out of what you have said. In fact, the little bit of knowledge that you are prepared in giving over and assisting those who can't help themselves. Obviously, there are structures that you've got to do it with. But thank you very much for your I think this is very key, because it has got to do with advising the politicians as to how they should go, how they should navigate. And thank you very much. We're hoping that you wouldn't be given a limited period; you should be given a free for all for the time immemorial. But unfortunately, it has got to stop somewhere and get another one. Others will get used, and you start becoming arrogant and thinking that you are the only one who knows everything. Thank you very much. Members, that is the presentation. It has been very short and straightforward, and it's very clear. So I'm not sure if you've got any questions, but they are here. They are here, all of them, waiting for you to ask them questions. You've got none, big one. You're convinced. Johnita, are you convinced? This is what I was asking myself as I was listening to him. No, it's either, there are two things, Dr. Steve. It's either it's so difficult what you've presented that there are no questions, or it's so clear that everybody is happy with what you have done. But let's just hear the voices, even if there are no questions. Let's start with you, Professor Thompson.
We're particularly excited about the new bioeconomy strategy that the minister launched in January, February. It's been a long time coming. I was involved in writing the first bioeconomy strategy, which was over 10 years ago. And what is exciting about this is the importance of rural infrastructure. One example that Steve mentioned was the biogas, because that can happen in the rural area. using what's available and having the industry right there. And I think what you pointed out was so important, and I'm actually going to be going home and telling a friend of mine who's just got such a project in the Eastern Cape that this is the kind of thing that we must really emphasize. So thank you for that input.
Professor Thompson. Mashenga ngalenda kuqala ngoba umazondo.
Mazondo.
Oh, yes, Mazondo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I appreciate the opportunity. Honourable members, my area of passion is gender, women's equality and empowerment, and the opportunity that the NACI focus on gender has presented is one that is both humbling but also concerning, because we all know that in the around the issue of gender equality and the empowerment of women, there is a important and effective machinery that has been established, the National Policy for Gender Policy Framework for Gender Equality and Women Empowerment is a tool that has been put out for implementation across the country, with government spheres and so on. However, the coordination challenge is one that causes us to be in the place where we still saying in all fields there needs to be a lot that goes into gender, the gender focus. We have then initiated the process of providing tools for NACI itself to start infusing the gender focus and gender mainstreaming its own work. And you see this, the booklet that has been provided, the e-learning platform that has been spoken about. We are hoping that this will be the basis on which the escalated focus on coordination and actual mainstreaming is going to be taken forward in the science and technology sector. I cannot overemphasize the point that it's a systems approach, and most of the conversations that have taken place prior to us coming in were around acknowledging the systems approach that will move us to achieve the vision of change that we all have as government and its instruments. However, if we do not focus on doing this coordination effectively, it is still going to be a very, very slow walk, but I'm encouraged by the fact that it is a walk and it's underway.
Thank you very much, Mazondo. Are you aware that the little economy that is going on in rural areas is by females? The males are migrant workers. They are not there most of the time, but even if the husband the women are able to maintain whatever that's not, and as against males who can't handle some of the things when they are alone, they always need assistance, but females don't need assistance. They can do. I'm not sexist, I'm not biased. Ukekana is going to hit me and say, you know, he's tough. No, thank you very much. We hope you do it well, but you don't destroy us so that we become extinct. So you make sure that we still remain. We still remain around. Mabtele.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I think Council has covered pretty much everything, but the only thing that I would like perhaps to add is the issue of the deepening focus that we think NACI should continue to focus on the vision of the NDP, but also bear in mind that the institution advises across government, as indicated in the legislature. So even though we're located in the science and technology domain, we want to start reaching out into the other areas of government, because the Act empowers us to advise Cabinet through our minister as well.
Are you the acting CEO as of now?
Yes.
Oh, it's a tough job.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair and the honourable members. I think the council has covered a lot, which I concur with. I'm on the area of monitoring and evaluation. I think we realise, even though the strategies and policies, if they can be, even if they are well weighted or they got good vision for the societal impact, but monitoring and evaluation is very useful to monitor that, to make sure where are we with our projects or with our initiatives in the NSI. So we will be busy with giving those indicators, but also in improving the indicators measurement framework to make sure all the stakeholders, we understand what we are measuring and what we are trying to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Steve. Thank you very much with your team. We really appreciate. Don't think that the fact that we don't ask you questions is because we don't understand. We know, but we're happy with what you're doing. The only thing that you need to help us, we must not be cheated when they switch off electricity and say it's what do they say? They say it's load shedding. Sometimes it's because of the lack of capacity, and they hide behind, no, it's load shedding. So if you could protect us from that angle. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. Appreciate it.
To this portfolio committee. My name is Dyer Reddy. I'm Professor Dyer Reddy. I'm a professor at the University of Cape Town. That's my day job, but I'm here as president of the Academy of Science of South Africa, ASAF.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Professor Roseanne Dyer, and I'm the full-time executive officer of the Academy.
My name is Honourable Chair, Member. My name is Morakin Chilwan. I'm the financial manager of ASAF.
Thank you very much. You can crack one.
Thank you, Chair. We have a presentation which along the way will provide this portfolio committee of details of our plans for the next year. But let me say that I'm mindful of the fact that, as you've indicated, that it's a new committee. And so what I will try to do along the way is just to provide some background detail which will help to flesh out the kind of work we do and how we operate and so on. So if we go to the mandate of ASAF, there are really two key aspects to it. One is to honor distinguished scholars, distinguished scientists in our country in all fields of science. And by that I mean physics, mathematics, life sciences, the health sciences, medicine, and the social sciences as well. I would emphasize that. So that's the first part of our mandate. And the second part is to generate evidence-based solutions. In other words, to provide science advice that would inform policymakers, particularly on matters that are of national importance. But also, in many cases, these coincide with issues that are of importance on the continent or even more widely than that. So what are our goals then? First of all, we recognize and we reward excellence. We identify the top scientists in the country. They are nominated for membership. We have a rigorous procedure for electing members, and we have that opportunity to do so every year. Promotion of innovation, scholarly activity across a broad range of activities, and as I go through the presentation, you will see a number of concrete examples of the kind of work we do. Scientific advice, I've mentioned just a moment ago. Effective advice. Chair, I would say that what makes us almost unique in this respect, as far as the advice is concerned, is that the way we go about it is that we constitute expert panels, most of the time comprising members who serve on a completely voluntary basis, so nobody's paid to do the work. We are free of vested interests, so we do not speak on behalf of this or that company or even government for that matter. We approach the challenges at hand as independent scientists. And then furthermore, once we have carried out the work, produced a report, we send the reports out for rigorous review, and thereafter they are made public on the website. They are distributed, so the work we do is not confidential. In other words, it is there for everybody to use. Science education is an important part of what we do, and we'll see later on. One key example would be the magazine Quest that we publish on a regular basis, distribute very widely, but we are also involved in various projects that are aimed at promoting science education. And then we are an academy for our country, but we are part of a family, a network of academies across the African continent and then globally as well. And we are not only members of these different networks, but in some cases we also serve in very important positions on the global bodies. A word about the alignment with government goals, which of course is a key aspect of the whole process of determining our strategy and our objectives in any particular year. One has got to do with strengthening the skills base, particularly in the sciences, of course. We are we have for a long time now been promoting and strengthening regional development advancement across the African continent by working together with other academies. Health is a major, health issues I should say, are a major part of the kind of work that we do. We have various activities that are directed towards rural development, for example in the area of agricultural education, training and so on. And then with regard to the improvement of our environmental assets and conserving our assets and our natural resources, we, again, broadly speaking, in the domain of the environment, we have many activities. Chair, what I'm going to do next is, you'll see that picture there shows a, right at the center of the secretariat, and around it there are five circles with different functions. These are intended to set out the way in which the work of the Academy is carried out. Let me just add to that the following. We have a secretariat headed by Professor Dyer, who is the executive officer. At the moment there are around 24 staff members based in Pretoria. Our offices are in Pretoria. Then we have a council that governs the Academy. The council is headed by the president, and we have 13 members on the council, including one member who is a NACI representative. The other members are elected by, the other council members are elected by the membership of the Academy. So the council serves a 4-year term, and in October of this year we will be 2 years into our present 4-year term. So if I may turn then to the different programs, starting with the one right on top, which is governance and administration. Well, in the first place, that is where we locate our work that has to do with compliance, audits, ensuring good, efficient management, both financial and of human resources. The whole business of administering and governing the processes whereby we elect members, whereby we recognize members, we have various awards, that is also located there. And then we have a system, as I said earlier, of appointing or electing members each year. We're in the process of changing the way in which we do that, simply because it hasn't worked all that well up to now. The reason for that, Chair, is the following. We have, at the moment, around 420 members spread across a really wide range of disciplines. So every year we have nominations and members have to vote. So the typical member will have before him or herself a list of candidates and their CVs and various items of information. Some may be in areas quite close to that of the member, others will be really, really far away. And so members sometimes have difficulty in forming a rigorous assessment of candidates. What we are therefore going to do is to introduce a system in terms of which we'll have a number of committees dealing with particular disciplines. So health sciences, life sciences, mathematics and physics and so on. And those committees will do much of the preliminary work and then subsequently put the slates to the membership. The scholarly publishing program is the second one of our major programs. So, as the name suggests, this is where we have located all of the work that is concerned with publication. Right on top there, you see a reference to open access. Open access platforms. Now, the background to this is the following. We have a database called Cielo, which is something that had been developed in Brazil some years ago. We worked with the Brazilians for a number of years, and quite recently were able to set the database up locally in South Africa. The second aspect of this work has to do with evaluating South African journals through a rigorous peer review process, and then once they have gone through that process, and provided they come through it satisfactorily, the journal is then placed on the CLR, on the open access system, meaning literally that. So it means that anybody and everybody has free access to the journal. I should say the same applies to the South African Journal of Science, which is our flagship journal. So one has to do with giving substance to the principle of open access and free access, and the other has to do with improving the quality of our local journals. There's a huge number, I think more than 200 journals published in South Africa. We have assessed what perhaps less than 30 so far, or thereabouts, more than 30. So we do. We have specialist panels, and every year we are able to assess a few and keep it going. And fortunately, since almost 2 years ago, when we had an additional injection of funding through the department, we were able really to jack up the system, accelerate it, and add staff to that particular activity. So that's that quality assurance I've talked about briefly. And then the business of scientific writing, whether it's postgraduate students or young researchers, how does one go about writing proposals, writing research reports, writing, preparing articles to send to journals? So we have an online writing system that helps people do that. I've got a slide on the SA Journal of Science. It's an old journal. It's been around almost 100 years. But in recent times has been taken over by the Academy, so we run it, we manage the journal. We have an editorial board that that directs its activities. There are 6 issues published a year. The impact factor, you'll see there a bullet point referring to the impact factor. I should explain that this is the way in which, in the world of journal publishing, impact is measured. So one takes a journal and you count up the number of citations to articles in that journal over the last 2 years and divide that by the number of articles published in the last year. So clearly the higher the number, the greater the impact of the journal. 0.84 is not very high, I should say, but it comes off a very low base, so that number is improving all the time. And we are, with regard to online access and the like, we are more or less in the middle, I would say, of implementing a completely electronic publication of the journal. So it will be really high quality, easily readable and searchable, and of course with open access. Quest is our other major publication. This is a popular science magazine. It's directed particularly at high school learners, grades 10 to 12, and to teachers, educators, and the broader scientific community. So we publish 4 issues a year. It's full color. You can see from that cover picture there that we do make an effort to make it as attractive as possible. A huge print run, 25,000 issues are distributed, for example, to every school in the country that has a science department, and of course many, many other institutions. Here we are aiming to improve the impact of Quest even further through investigating further our distribution strategy. To whom should we be sending it? Where should this journal be sitting? Who should be reading it? Who's perhaps missing at the moment? And then, as far as Quest is concerned, we have been and continue to be in regular discussion with Department of Basic Education, of course, University Education Departments, SASTA, which is the South African Association for Science and Technology Advancement at the NRF, and the various science centres around the country. Moving on now, this is the third one of those big circles, the policy advisory program. Chair, this is where our science advice work sits. This is where it's located. What do I mean by science advice? What form does that take in practice? Well, for example, we carry out what we call consensus studies, where we gather evidence on a particular topic and investigate it very carefully, and as a panel, as a committee, provide a comprehensive view of the topic at hand. In other cases, we do assessment studies. So an assessment study is, in a way, an answer to the question, what is the state of energy research in the country, for example, and we would attempt to answer that without necessarily making firm recommendations. But then, as I said before, the objective always is that what we produce should be of use to policymakers, people who are actually involved in policy making, which is not what we do. We host workshops, and when we do host workshops, we will typically publish proceedings and send these out for review as well, conduct commentaries on government policies. Sometimes we would volunteer or elect to do something like this. In other cases, we would be approached by a government department for opinion or a commentary on a particular policy. So in 2010 or 2011, for example, we were asked to provide a commentary on the original integrated electricity resource plan, which I think was found to be very helpful in the discussions that followed from there. Localization of reports, well, that refers to the fact that in many cases we collaborate with other academies. Right now very recently, we completed a report on tobacco control, given the impact of smoking, particularly with regard to non-communicable diseases like heart disease, lung cancer, and so on. And with reports of this nature, sometimes reports or investigations carried out by other academies, we might take the report and consider how to, in a sense, digest it, synthesize, and present it in a way that is useful and more directed towards the South African situation. And then, of course, we also monitor the impact of our various study reports in the country and around the world. So I've got a few slides which I'll go through very quickly, which will give examples of the kind of policy work that we have been doing. We hosted a major conference last year on non-communicable diseases. That was the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. It's a global panel of medical academies, or academies with medical divisions or members. And that report, we are in the process of producing and distributing. Education of Health Professionals, another study which is getting off the ground. We are looking for funding for a study on the reproductive health of young people, of adolescents in South Africa. The tobacco control policy change I spoke about a moment ago. And then we are also participating in a study on the root causes for low coverage and under-immunization of African children. This we are doing with various African academies and also the Institute of Medicine, which is the American Medical Academy. While I'm on the subject, as far as the funding of this work is concerned, in many cases we make use of our parliamentary grant, but equally we spend a lot of time and effort sourcing funding, project funding from academy networks or from donor foundations and the like to carry out this work. Under education, we have a major effort underway on inquiry-based science education, a progressive approach to learning about science, and We are doing that particularly by implementing a French program called La Main à la Pâte through a pilot study at schools in the Gauteng area. We have a consensus study underway on agricultural education and training. So it starts off by taking stock of what, you know, what do we have in the way of agricultural education training institutes, and what should be done to ensure that we can generate the capacity that we need in the country. We're also starting a consensus study on the future of the mathematical sciences, which needless to say is central to much of the work that we do, and is central to development in this country. Fairly quickly, Science for Poverty Alleviation, we have a number of standing committees, I should say, and we are now in the process of revitalizing that particular standing committee, after which we need to develop an action plan that is in alignment with government priorities. The humanities are part of the Academy of Science. They had the humanities standing committee and the Academy had a successful conference in late June. We are constantly engaging with key stakeholders to promote the humanities in the country, because after all, even though many of the solutions to our problems will rely on science, it is human beings, it's people who implement them, it is societies that are at the heart of everything, and so the humanities are really important. And then we are in the process of completing a study on biosafety and biosecurity. Then the last slide on the policy advisory program, we are finalizing a study on the state of green technologies in the country, and we are hosting a media workshop that coincides with the launch of the IPCC assessment report. So the IPCC is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's a huge organization. It's governed through the United Nations. It publishes assessment reports from time to time, and one was published during last year. And so we have been able to host a media workshop and really to give this kind of really important activity the profile that it deserves. We're finalizing a study on what the state is of energy research in the country, and then hosting a workshop with Leopoldina. Leopoldina is the name of the German Academy of Sciences, with which we have a memorandum of understanding. We have a very close relationship, which received quite a major boost, I should say, during the German South Africa Year of Science in 2012. But the good work with Leopoldina is continuing, and this is really just one example. In addition, Chair, just a final general comment on this area with regard to the National Development Plan, which serves as a basis for determining the strategy, the objectives for the Academy. More and more we are engaged in work that is of that has a direct connection to the National Development Plan. Two examples would be earlier this year, a symposium that we had on nuclear energy. We were fortunate in organizing the symposium to have the cooperation of Professor Anton Eberhard, who is a National Planning Commissioner. He's the energy person on the commission. And really the aim was to bring everybody together, nuclear people, renewable energy people, everybody, and really try to get gain a better picture of what the position of nuclear energy should be in the energy mix in this country. So very, very useful. And then also in the area of education, particularly agricultural education, which is a major item, I would say, in the National Development Plan. There also we are planning on working together with the National Planning Commission. And there will be other projects as we go ahead. The liaison program, this has got to do with our activities that are aimed at interaction with either academies or networks around the world. So just to give an idea of how things are organized internationally, there are at the moment, I would say, perhaps 140 or so academies around the world. It's a little hard to determine the exact figure. But of those, around 110 are organized globally into what is it's called the IAP because its original name was the Inter-Academy Panel. It's now called the Global Network of Science Academies. And that is one organization that we are a member of. We also serve on the executive of the IAP. The G-Science meetings are meetings that are the, if you like, the academy equivalent or parallel to the G-Science political meetings, which would typically be the G8 countries plus five, typically some or most of the BRICS countries and others. And we run a meeting of the corresponding academies in parallel. The IAC is a body that produces reports on major issues for governments or for organizations like the United Nations. So the IAC, for example, did a major review some years ago on climate change. Professor Dyer was a member of that review panel. I happen to serve as co-chair at the moment on the IAC. And then we are members of other bodies. TWAS is the World Academy of Sciences. Ours is the Organization for Women in Science in Developing Countries. The Science and Technology for Science Forum is a forum organized in Japan each year, to which we generally contribute and we participate in that. The IAMP is the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. Then we are also in the process of strengthening links with ICSU, which is a body that comprises the International Discipline Associations, so International Associations of Mathematics, Physics, and so on. Leopoldina, the German Academy, is a close partner of ours. And then we ensure that our scientists, that South African scientists, are able to participate in various global science activities. We establish the connections, ensure that they have the right sort of profile. We have extensive activities in the area of women in science. There is a national chapter of ours through which we would develop and promote various activities. We are also getting a program off the ground shortly on women in science. A few years ago, we carried out a study with other academies in which we essentially linked inquiry-based science education, but specifically for women or children, you know, high school girls, in sub-Saharan Africa. So there we pulled together a number of key issues, science education in schools, particularly for women. What does one have to do to promote science, particularly to ensure that we have more girls taking science and young women, and then collaborating with our partners in sub-Saharan Africa, because it's an issue for all of us. The liaison program, we have there's an organization called SAAS, the South African Young Academy of Science, which, as the name suggests, is an academy of scientists who are under the age of 40, so when they hit 40, they are out. And one hopes that in most cases they would, in due course, become members of the senior academy. They're extremely energetic. They have an enormous amount of programs on the go, and it really has been a revelation, I would say, to see science in action in this country and outside. We have various ways of recognizing excellence. We have two gold medals, and we should note here that, that these are very specifically called Science for Society gold medals. So the point is not simply to present a gold medal to an outstanding scientist, but to an outstanding scientist who also has contributed to development to society in one way or another. Sydney Brenner is a South African Nobel laureate, and we have postdoctoral fellowships established in his honor. Then we also host a visiting scholar each year, and we have scholarly lectures. At the moment, certainly in the major centers like Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg, but we are trying all the time to extend the numbers of centers. And then communication and publishing, well, I've commented on most of this along the way. The South African Journal of Science, Quest magazine, the whole business of producing and disseminating these, also our policy reports in hard copy form and electronically, they're all available on the website at any given time, promoting science awareness amongst young people, and then cooperating with relevant government departments and universities, other institutions, on raising science awareness, broadly speaking, which is a key aspect of our activities. Honourable Chair, I want to, at this stage, just move over to some financial matters, a budget summary, and what I'm going to do is ask our finance manager, Mr. Chilwane, to take us through. There are just two slides on these.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members, for the opportunity. In support of the activities that Professor Reddy spoke to, on the screen is a budget that enables us to undertake those activities. As you would see, our mainstream funding is through the Department of Science and Technology. We are able to get some funding from some sources, small as it may be. Some sources of income we generate from our membership. Members pay an amount of 200 rands per annum, and that enables them to receive all our publications. But as Prof also indicated, that those members do serve in various committees, you know, on for free. But just to indicate that we also get, you know, contract funding apart from the baseline funding. For instance, in this current financial year, we have already received an amount of 2 million in contract funding for other activities. But we also get funding from sources outside of the country, from institutions or organizations that we, you know, we work with. And therefore, our total budget for the current financial year is just below 27 million. But I think it's worth noting that this budget, it's an earlier one. There has been some changes in the sense that we've also managed to secure funding from the Department of Higher Education for an amount of about 5 million, and therefore that figure will actually be just over 30 million in total. And of course, there is a possibility that we'll continue to secure some funding here and there, but it's not something that, you know, we can talk about because we're not sure of, but that remains a high possibility at all times. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chilwane. Chair, that more or less concludes our presentation. Just a final word, to come back to what I said right at the beginning about our key mandate, which is that of providing science advice. In practice, as I've indicated, we often will respond to requests from, typically from government departments, and I could mention, well, science and technology, of course, but also health, minerals and energy. We are particularly keen, and we are also working hard to ensure that the resources of the Academy are known across the entire executive, across all government departments, so that we can broaden the scope of our activities. We are willing and able to do that, and as time goes by, it's been pleasing to note the inquiries, the communication that we have with more and more government departments. I would say also that there is no reason why our activity should be restricted to the executive. We're a resource for Parliament as well. So whether for this committee or other portfolio committees, that is something that we also need to work on to ensure that our existence is known, is more widely known, and what we are able to offer is also more widely known, also in the legislature. Chair, with that, I'll stop at this point, and of course we're happy to take comments and questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Darid, for your report. I hope that actually you, in the amount of money that you put, you're putting that money that you paid for me to go to Ghana. It's reflected. Remember, that is the presentation before we round it off. It's up to you to ask them questions. You don't have to restrict to clarifications. You can ask any question. Okay, Dr. Lovett.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, my apology for not being here for the whole presentation. I had to attend to another meeting. And forgive me if what I'm asking perhaps has been dealt with in your presentation. We are, as a committee, most of us are new, trying to get an idea and a feel for the different entities. Could you perhaps just explain to me, we had the National Innovation Agency just before you, and they also have a very strong policy and advisory role that they play, but I also see in your presentation that's also a role that you play. What is the distinction between the two institutions? Then I also looked at your communication and publications. To what extent do you use the web in terms of communicating, especially at school level and with students and so forth? And then thirdly, Chair, I was just wondering whether the members of the committee could be on the, the list for these magazines that you have, these journals, with a distribution list, because I think it would be quite interesting to receive this and read this. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, and especially your last point, that we should be on that list of journals. If we could be on the list so that we can know what they are publishing, especially that they are global. But maybe let's take all the questions and then you can respond to all of them. Big question?
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. Mine is one, actually. I'm worried about this liaison program, promoting young scientist activities. My problem is one. When the department presents to us, we spoke and we were all worried about not involving, especially rural, young people to science. For example, we said we are pleading that they should start this science from primary level to high school level until to the postdoctoral. So, but looking at this thing, it seems as I don't know whether these people are participating, or if they are participating, where they come from, and who are the participants, in fact. So let them try to expand a little bit so that we'll be able to understand. Because we are still pleading that we will be happy if all the schools in 9 provinces, being primaries and high schools, has science subjects, mathematics, so that they will be we will be able to say that we are moving somewhere. So let them expand. Maybe I will have a follow up question. I wanted to understand more about this thing. I thank you.
Thanks, Sufwa. I think those are the questions. Maybe the last question to add to it. You might be working at a different level, but one believes that science is the key in transforming our society. And moving from our history, it has been placed in certain areas. But we want to see how are we transforming that old order to the new order so that we can have as many scientists as we can, even if you are working at a different level.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Member Kakana. Maybe I could just take that the last question, and then Professor Dyer will respond to the earlier questions around policy, you know, who does what and so on, and about the use of the web. Well, you know, in the first place, I would simply like to echo exactly, Chair, what you've had to say and what Ms. Kakana has had to say as well. One cannot emphasize too much the importance of science, mathematics and science, its role in the development of our country. All right, what does that mean? You know, we often talk about engineers, very skilled people we need. Where are they going to come from? What is the situation in our schools? And of course, there are loads and loads of issues to discuss there. But really, allied to the business of teaching science in schools is the matter of enthusing young people about science, making them want to do science. That's the first thing. And the second thing is exactly as you put it, sir, it's for everybody, and access, and there should be access to enjoying science and learning science at every level of society, and particularly both urban and rural societies. So if one takes Quest, for example, the magazine, that is distributed really right across the country to every school that has a science department. We are taking particular steps. We are particularly conscious of the fact that in rural areas, very often there are significant capacity problems, more so than one would find in major urban areas, with regard to science teachers and the like. So our job is not about teaching science per se, but really promoting science awareness, and most importantly, ensuring that young people are enthusiastic about it, realize that this is how one understands how the world works. And though I may be sitting in a village somewhere in the Northern Cape or Limpopo, whatever, I can do it. I can do science, and then be given the opportunity to engage in science, both in a formal way as a school subject, and then in a fun way as well, through workshops, competitions, all sorts of things like that. Chair, I'll leave it at that point. Professor Dyer may want to expand at that point or otherwise go on to the other questions.
Right. Thank you for the questions. Regarding the first question, the distinction between NACI and the Academy, I think that's a very pertinent question. We have a memorandum of understanding with NACI, and that clearly articulates that we will work together, cooperate, but there is a clear distinction in the manner in which we undertake our studies and the kind of studies that we undertake. So, for example, and every year we share with NACI our annual performance plan. So before it gets finalized, we sit together and we discuss each of our annual performance plans. So we know what studies we're engaging in. I think that the main distinction from our perspective is that the Academy is best positioned to undertake the in-depth, longer type of studies that are of more of a complex nature, where we could perhaps have a period of 18 months to 2 years to undertake such a study. NACI is better positioned to give the kind of confidential, rapid response advice that the minister or government may need from time to time. That is not something that we are well positioned to do, because as Professor Reddy stated, our reports are generally based on consensus. They take a long time to produce. They go through peer review, and then they're in the public domain. So I think in essence that's what distinguishes us. With regard to, you know, how do we utilize the web, for school children in particular was the question. Well, Quest Science Magazine, which is I think the main piece of literature that would be relevant for school children, is available. It can be downloaded from the web free of charge. But we're also this year in the process of investigating how we're going to use social media, because we recognize that the youth is far more skilled at social media than any of us are, and so we're trying to see how we can improve the impact of Quest Magazine through social media. We've just pulled together a report on that, and we'll be implementing it hopefully. With regard to the distribution list and putting honourable members onto that list, it'll be our great pleasure, and we will certainly action that. I'd like to add a few comments about what we do with the young scientists to what Professor Reddy has already mentioned. I think there are a number of different tools that we have to try to promote science amongst young people. So we've already mentioned Quest Science Magazine, which, as we say, has got a big distribution. But I think importantly, we also exhibit Quest at many of the science events around the country. So there are many, many. We participate in about 7 or 8 each year, including the very large one that's held in Grahamstown, the SciFest every year, where about 70,000 learners from across the country gather. So exhibitions are very important to reach learners, not just in the urban areas, but in rural areas as well. We also participate each year in the National Science Week, and the focus of the activities changes from province to province. So last year we visited schools in Limpopo and in the Eastern Cape. And again, that's all centered around the Quest Science Magazine and having young people talk to the learners in the schools about the importance of science careers and what opportunities there are. So I think that's something else we do. I mean, obviously we can't do everything, so we have to, target where we find our niches. But I think another area that we are active in is with regard to the teacher training institutions. So we are trying very hard to get Quest Science Magazine distributed to all the university teacher training departments, so that the teachers who are being trained are skilled in utilizing Quest, and when they go out into the schools, they can actually implement in a meaningful way, and that the magazine doesn't get sent to a school and ends up sitting on the principal's desk and never being used, but it's teachers who've been trained in how to use it. And then finally, just to mention about the pilot project, which Professor Reddy mentioned very briefly, we have this pilot project on inquiry-based science education that we're implementing in 10 schools in the Swanee district. And so basically what we're responsible for is
the preparation of the tools and the training of the trainers who then go out into the schools and actually implement the lessons with the teachers. So the teachers are trained on how to implement this very unique way of learning science, and this is done at the primary school level to try and get them interested in science so they can follow it through their careers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Professor Tapp. Okay, Big Boy, what?
Chair, I will be happy if our entities can have an attitude of going extra mile. And going extra mile is something like not doing with your hands, but assisting with knowledge is what they are teaching us. But I don't get any attitude from this entity. For the mere fact that you will say that teaching science is not my subject is to promote. While we know and read very clear, we know that you promote. But how can you do that? Your stakeholder, your participants are all inclusive. Because I can tell you that if we can go to the details, you will find that something that you will never be happy with. You will find something that you will never be happy with. Like, for example, if I can ask where they went to Limpopo and what happened, and which schools, then it will remain as old days. And I don't want to remain that. So going extra mile is to say to your department, look, for us to be able to promote this inclusively, how if you push this request of making sure that all the schools had subjects in science? So the department knows who to engage, as we requested them, to say that you can even go to basic education and talk to them and higher education. So we must see this being an inclusive subject. You know why we are worried about science? It's because of we were segregated from this subject. Big time. Maybe, I don't know, I will be the scientist today. But because of we were never given chance, then that's why today we are not scientists. And now we are saying that let's work together to transform our country. But in doing that, please make sure that our children are involved in this subject. Just imagine if tomorrow you are promoting science in Tshwane, and I see that 90% is white people. 90% of that. Most these township schools are not included because they are not doing science in their schools. Are you going to be happy? And what you should do? Yes, you don't teach science. But in going extra mile, you can do a proposal to your department that I want these events to be inclusive. And maybe, let me not go far, because some it will be assumptions. Oversight, I think, is very important. Sometimes when they promote these competitions, doing whatsoever, maybe we should be there and observe who is a participant there and what is happening. Because presentation is very good, I can see. This book is very good, the way you present. But maybe, Chair, this is my proposal, that we should go with them and see what is happening there. Otherwise, we will think that things are going country. There's no transformation. We are worried about transformation, especially coming to science. Yesterday, they didn't give us chance. to know what we are knowing today. So please, let us see how best we can help each other. We need each other, we must find each other and work together. As Mandela requested that, wanted this beautiful nation to be a rainbow nation. So let us make sure that we use the resources in a rightful way of promoting rainbow nation and forget about yesterday. Please. I thank you, Chair. But let me just check with Mr. Finances. If those international sources are still funding them, and who are they? Because I was asking people not to tell us about other sources, to tell us exactly who is your source. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Big Boy. Dr. Chula, I think it's just one question that they want to ask. The other one is a comment. We'll deal with it.
Yes.
That question.
Yeah. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. Well, our mainstream funding, as I said, is from government. We have been getting some funding from the United States National Academy of Sciences, for instance. United States National Academy of Sciences. We have received some funding from Leopoldina, which our executive officer referred to. It's also an Academy of Science from the German Academy of Science. We also get some funding from NASEC, National Academy of Network of Academy of Sciences. So those are international, or I would say outside academies. Those are the kinds of institutions that I was referring to. And also another one is IMP, Intermedical Panel. Another one is Inter Academy Panel. Those are institutions that have interest and focus in the kind of work that we do as an academy.
That Chilana, to help the members would be not just to mention the names for later. You give us a document which is going to be specifically talking about donor funding. You mention the name and the percentage of money that you get from that, so that we could compare with the percentage, the South African percentage. Members, if there's nothing, why don't we thank them honestly, humbly thank them? But there are certain things that this is the last group, by the way. We've come to an end. What has become very clear is that science and technology is not what they're doing. I'm not talking about you, but the whole science and technology. Even those institutions that are, what do you call them, that are connected to the department, we don't know about them. As Parliament, it's something that we need to, and that is obvious when you look at the budget that you are given. Yet, all of you, without exception, you are key in two things, in transforming this country. Because part of our transformation, I think there are three things that happened in South Africa that made South Africa to be what it was before 1994. One of them is that somebody decided when they colonized them, they decided that their cultures must be pushed aside so that they mustn't have dignity. And that went with religion. The second one was the question of land, so that they remain poor. And third one was to make sure that they're not educated, and the education that they get, which is where you come in, the education is a Bantu education. For my simple definition of Bantu education, it's an education that you give a child so that that child cannot be better than the lecturer. You make that child, either he or she, to memorize what has been taught and organized by the lecturer or by the teacher. And if you memorize what he has given you, you can never be better than him. We were not given a chance to be lateral thinkers, to be independent thinkers. And one of the errors which makes you a lateral thinker, an independent thinker, is science. And it was deliberate that we should be given like that. I made an example yesterday that where I come from in rural areas, if I see an aeroplane that is going past my place, what we're told by our parents, I ask for bread. You ask for bread. When you see it, you shout, I want bread. But you were not made to question why is that aeroplane flying, being able to fly there, being able to remain in the air with the gravity that is pulling it, but it still remains there and it's moving forward. You were not asked to have that inquisitive mind. And you just remember that no, it's somebody else who can do that. And in fact, there's another term that we used to use. You know, you always get this Glendic fish in a tin. When we're still young, we're told to put umlungu mdala wafaki intlaze toti nifaliyo, meaning that the white is old, the white people are more brilliant than you. They put a fish in a closed tin. And that's what was actually going on. And it was given to us, and you were made to feel inferior. Now, science is one of those areas that you, but it's not your problem. It's the previous research's problem. But it's something that when we say we want to transform, we've got to make people think laterally and think out of the box and be independent thinkers. And this is what Honorable Gegana is trying to talk about. That's why I didn't want you to respond to it. But it's something that must be at the back of your mind, that if we want to transform South Africa, science has got to be key to that. That goes on to say, you know, one of the things, I think somebody, you might have heard the story, that somebody said, if you want to hide information from the Africans in South Africa during the apartheid, you just put it in a book. Like one old man, when he gave his son the heir, he just put it in the book and he said, take this book. And he didn't tell him that there was a check of R1 million in there. And the kid never read the book until he died. And then somebody took the book and opened it only to find that it had R1 million in it. And this is what we need to do. Because you can take those quest master cousins and take them to the schools, but if they are not geared up in reading, they're not going to read them. They're just going to put them, which is something that we need to encourage, that we should make sure that we teach our kids to read. I think we are not blaming you. Don't ever think that we're blaming you. But part of the problem, you know, one day I went to a funeral. When I was in that funeral, we went to the graveyard. When I moved out of the graveyard, there was a smell in the graveyard, around the graveyard. I thought the smell was there, and I blamed everything that was there, that, oh, there's a bad smell here. When I moved into my car, the smell was still there. You know, I had already blamed the environment, but the smell was still in my car. Then I started blaming something in the car. I went out of the car to the house where there's a ritual of washing hands. The smell was still there. Now, I said to myself, no, let's not blame the environment. Let me look at myself. Where is this smell? Only to find that I'd stumbled on on feces and they're under my shoes. So I'm moving with the problem myself, and I think it's somebody. So the problem is not only with you, it's with us as politicians. So we shouldn't blame you. We should ask ourselves, what are we doing to make science known in the schools? Because we're the public figures. We're the ones who are supposed to invite you and say, come to this school, come to this chief, come to this place. So part of the problem is us in the Dekekan. I think we need to assist them and say, let's take it. Let's not put the blame on one side. So thank you very much for your presentation. We are going to try and make sure that you are known. Not only that you are known, there's something called BRIS, yeah, which is something that helps us as Parliament to talk about your budget and make sure that you get enough budget to do all the things that you're doing. But it would be of interest that when you give us that financial, you should give us, because part of your work is to award the best scientists in South Africa. It would be of interest to us as a portfolio committee. Whenever you give awards, we must know those awards. Not because we want to divide South Africa, but we want to see whether are we moving up in taking even those that were left outside the circle, that they are getting into the circle, without threatening those that are inside, but they must be part of the circle. So we need to see that that's happening. And in fact, it's the big majority of South Africans, if you look at statistics. Are they part of that situation, or we are still moving with the old regime where it's mainly whites that are there, that are in the, so we need, it's only males, how many females, how many Africans are there? We need to see that we're getting the awards. Not that we say you must give even somebody who's producing useless papers must be given. I mean, you take Bongani Mayosi, you give him awards because he's black, yet the papers are not good papers. We're not talking about that. I mean, the standard, the quality, we're not looking about quantities. It must be quantities and quality. They must go together. We don't want to lower the quality at the expense of the quantities. It must be good, but as long as those who are on the other side are realizing that it was not their makeup, it was the laws of that time that made it to be like that. So now let's recognize that even those like Gekan, as you were saying, probably you would be a prof in Pretoria, but because of his conditions, the laws barred him from being a prof in Pretoria. So his son must not go through the same thing. His son must have an opportunity. So this is what we're trying to talk about. We're trying to build a South Africa that is going to be for all of us, and we need to enjoy, so that when we die, we know that at least we've done something for those who can't do anything for themselves. Thank you very much for your presentation. You want to finish up, Professor Adairi?
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Really, just a word or two in finishing up. Let me say first of all that with regard to your comments and Honourable Member Kikana's comments, they are extremely well taken. We are trying our best, but we can always do more. And I thought you put it well. You know, the fact that there remains the issue of access and opportunity, irrespective of where, say, the school child lives, what the resources happen to be in the school, and so on. So we take that in exactly the right spirit as a challenge to do better than we are doing at present. With regard to being able to see firsthand the activities of the Academy, we would be delighted. We would really welcome an engagement or engagements of that kind with members of the Portfolio Committee. I think we tried to set something up a couple of years ago, and it didn't work out for whatever reason. But we'd be very happy to do that, so that in addition to, you know, a formal presentation like this, you might have an opportunity to see on the ground how some of our activities are carried out in practice. Chair, it remains then for me to thank you very much and to thank honourable members for being here, for your comments and questions, which we find very helpful, and also for your support. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you, member. We'll always support you in all the endeavors. So as long as you give us those publications, as the Honourable Lazak was saying, we just need those publications. We'll try and be and read them all the time. Oh, there's lunch there, people.
Oh,
yeah, there's lunch, so you mustn't run away. Okay. Thank you very much, Secretary. Thank you very much. All the best. Thank you very much, Department, for assisting us.